Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Sam.
And we're going to do a fun little episode today where we talk about our best mental health tips.
Yeah, we were chatting, as we always do, very frequently. And I think you like brought this up through text that you were like, I think we should like share like the best insights that we've gotten, whether it's like professionally or like through our own work.
Yeah.
And I was like, immediately, yes. And I have a couple.
Yeah.
But we haven't told each other what they are. So we are going in blind to this. We knew kind of like the overall direction we were going to go for the episode. But we don't know each other's points.
Yeah. So we'll see and we'll riff and go from there. And
we're
going to cover probably a bunch of different topics. So we're excited.
Yeah. So I think since it's your idea, you should go first.
Okay, one of my favorite mental health tips that I use with myself often is trying to remind myself that how I feel right now is not necessarily how I will feel in the future.
What situations do you find that helps you with most?
I find it when I'm really overwhelmed, like especially I think with like parenting, because parenting is so phase intensive.
Right.
Where – you know, it's so different having a newborn, a baby, a toddler. They change so quickly. It is so easy when you're in like a hard phase or you're feeling really overwhelmed to be like, oh my God, this is how it's going to feel forever and get really stuck there. Like I remember when Peyton was first going into daycare, she was sick so much and we were sick so much and it was horrible. And I felt like, oh my God, this is going to be my whole life now. This is miserable. I don't imagine myself getting out of it. And then finally, after I think it was like 2 months of just like on and off sickness, we finally got to the other side. And I was like, oh my God, I had thought that this would continue for forever. And one of my like favorite things about this is when I learned that actually our brains, like, right, when whatever we're experiencing in the current moment, like colors and filters how we see not only our future, but also our past. So if you're feeling like depressed, it impacts how you remember things. And right, it of course it you know, robs you of hope.
Right.
And that's why it's really hard to imagine things getting better and things getting different. But I think so often we take how we're feeling right now as a measurement of this is how we're always going to feel when we try to imagine our future and try to think about decisions. And I try to come back to, right, just because I'm feeling really overwhelmed or struggling with like my daughter's transition to daycare – doesn't mean daycare is a bad idea necessarily.
Yeah, it's kind of like the ultimate counter to like black and white thinking.
Yeah.
All or nothing thinking.
Yeah.
And like helps kind of like reframe it and say like, just because it's hard now doesn't mean it's going to be hard forever. Just because it is hard right now doesn't mean my life has always been hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. You've also, you've spoken about that quite a bit too, which I've always like on like your socials and stuff, which I always love that idea. Like that's been helpful for me.
Yeah.
I think when I saw your post on that once. I
was Well, I learned about it in a book like that talked about like essentially our brain literally struggles with this as a concept. Like our brain is really bad at – because it's so based on us trying to stay alive in the current moment, our brain really doesn't do a good job of like imagining things being different or imagining that we will be different, that we will change. Mm. We just assume how we feel right now is how we're always going to feel. And that as a result makes us sometimes make, you know, very real decisions in our life,
right,
based off of sometimes temporary emotions that can change.
Well, because when we're anxious, what we're trying to do is predict the future.
Yes.
And so if we're feeling anxious and overwhelmed and flooded by something that's happening now,
yeah,
the only way we will interpret the future, if we don't bring awareness to it, is through a lens where it's like, oh my God, everything's horrible. It's awful. It's really bad. Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's why we then often will take sort of drastic action of totally changing things if we're feeling really anxious. And I think it is why, and we talked about this a bit in the change episode, the importance of when you are making a decision, sitting in that choice, you know, taking some time with it, checking in of if you're being impacted by how you're feeling and thinking about, because we just can't, our brains can't conceptualize easily feeling differently in our current circumstances. We think we need an external change a lot of times to change how we feel internally. And that is not always the case.
Do you think that's tied at all to like just being avoidant?
I think so.
Like it's like there's kind of, I don't know how to like braid all of this together, but kind of this like I'm feeling really anxious and really flooded. I've felt this way for forever.
Yeah.
I'm going to feel this way for forever. So like, why do XYZ?
Yeah. Or I'm going to do something really drastic.
Yes. Yeah. Like I need to get away. I need to run away.
Yeah. Which I need to leave this. Yeah. Exactly.
Ties into like fight flight mode.
Yeah. Yeah. But especially the thing about the past, like I think a lot of people can understand how you're bad at imagining feeling differently. Yeah. But the fact that it colors your past was such a wild fact.
Well, and it... You would think, as a therapist, but I'd be like, yeah, I know all this. No, I don't. Well, and that makes so much sense because it's also like where the concept of like the rose-colored glasses comes from.
Yeah.
Like if things are happy and good, you can like from a safe, secure space, you can look back and kind of minimize some of the things that you went through and be like, oh, I like it, but it wasn't that bad, whatever.
Yep, yep.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. And I think it's so interesting because I struggled with this a lot in like my addiction where I would be like, things have always been horrible. And it's just, I just am fascinated with how our memories shape and change and are not fact.
Right.
Right. Like it's wild because we all think our memories are 100% true and fact, and they are our perspective, but even just how our memory changes, I think is so interesting. And the fact that our current feelings, emotions, mental state, impacts how we see our past is just like wild to me.
Yeah, it's like it's not indicative of anything.
Yeah.
It's just indicative of immediate present moment. Mm-hmm.
And until you get out of it, I think it is so hard to even realize how much you are struggling sometimes or realize how much you were in it. Knowing it's like a brain thing helps me in some way because I'm like, someone isn't making this up. This is my brain. It's not my fault.
It's science. Should we try to have Neil deGrasse Tyson on the get? Do you know who he is?
Yeah.
Should we have him guest on the pod and
yes,
explain space in the universe and why we're just on a floating rock?
I like a fun fact about me. I get so overwhelmed by like existentialism and the idea of forever and like all of that that I shut down. I can't. My brain stops working.
The thing about space that like boggles my mind, well, twofold, to kind of like tie it somewhat to like mental health stuff though. Yeah. Like I think things within our internal world like feel so big.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it is. Like there's a lot of things that
happen
to us.
It is your world.
So, yeah. It is your world. It's a big deal. The things that happen to you impact you, whatever. I think sometimes for me, space and the vastness of it, like as much as it like floods my brain and gets me over, like I can't think of a black hole. Like the other day I was scrolling TikTok and
hold on to my desk.
I saw this video of they're like, NASA put together a simulation of what it would look like to fall into a black hole. And I was like I had to immediately scroll.
That is how I feel. I feel nauseous. Yeah.
I get like, I just feel so, what's the word I'm looking for? Useless.
Yeah.
like just kind of like, no, I could do whatever I want. Like yeah, I
flailing. No.
Yeah, like I'm just gonna fly off this rock like at any minute. But something that like blows my mind is, you know, when they show pictures of like, they'll show like the night sky completely clear, and it's just like tens of thousands of millions of galaxies. But then you know the space between those is like it or the other thing is how they've said, this is exposure therapy for Amanda, everyone. How if there's like an alien civilization somewhere looking at us, they would be seeing us when like they were dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah.
Like the time thing, or that technically like what we're seeing is like not really what it looks like right now. No.
But I'm done. See, there you go. None of this is real.
Well, we're going to shut her down for today, everybody. Anyway. All right. Well.
All right, Sam. What?
Let's all take deep breaths. Yeah. We're okay. I will now share my.
Yes.
Wow, this has been a wild. We've only been recording for 11 minutes. This is wild. We went there. Okay. So the first point that I want to address, and this is one that my therapist asked me this when I was putting the pieces back together when my business partner backed out on me and I ended up choosing to shut everything down. I had some big spicy feelings about all that, understandably so. And there was a lot that I was working through at the time. My therapist asked me in a session, she said, how did you contribute to this dynamic? And that was the question. And it stopped me in my tracks. And to give just a little bit of perspective there, it wasn't about blaming me for anything.
Right.
Because I none of this was me.
Yeah.
I made the decision, but I was backed into a bit of a corner to make the decision. Mm-hmm. When it was about me being reflective of what I did and didn't do to protect myself within that situation. Mm-hmm. And the boundaries I didn't have, the things I held back from saying, just like, where did I reflectively want to do things differently? And it was such like a humbling and empowering call in, not a call out. I call it a call in. And it helped me put so much to bed. Because what it did is it stopped me from constantly like giving away my power and kind of acting like it was just this thing that I just got swept away and like had no control. No, I realized there was a lot of things that I could have done very differently.
Yeah.
To approach things differently, make different decisions, have seen things and noticed things a little bit earlier. And the mindset and the reframes that I needed to have to work through all that.
Yeah.
And that was like so impactful for me to like take back my power and take that accountability, because one of my huge core values is like accountability. And a lot of people have asked me like, well, why don't you talk about it more? And I'm like, well, because there's really nothing to say. I had a business partner. The business ended. That's it.
Yeah.
And I worked through it on my own.
Yeah.
And have had some wonderful people in my life, you included, across the way, that have helped make sense of it all. But like, I think that question, how did you contribute to this dynamic? I've applied it to so many other situations within my life.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so helpful to pause when you are in something, any type of a situation that feels like it's just overtaking you.
Yeah.
Or looking back on something that you feel caused you a lot of pain, a lot of hurt, a lot of disappointment, and say, well, I wasn't just like I don't even know what term to use to describe this. Like I wasn't just sitting there helpless.
Yeah.
Like I was engaging with this dynamic while it was going on, whatever this is, whether this is work, whether this is family, whether this is relationship, any type of friendship or situation like that. Of recognizing like we have a say.
Yeah.
And we have a voice, and there's things that we can do to advocate for ourselves, protect ourselves. Mm-hmm. And when we've made mistakes, mm-hmm. when we've done things wrong, when we didn't handle things well, when we could have done things better, mm-hmm. like to call yourself in and be like, no, I'm not perfect.
Yeah.
And I don't have to be.
Yes.
By asking myself this type of a question, how did you contribute to this dynamic? It allows me to learn, do better, be better, feel more involved intentionally in my own life.
Yeah.
And it just like completely altered the way I kind of view things.
Mm-hmm. I love that so much. I think that you do such a good job of talking to people about that and helping that. And I love it so much because I also agree. I was in a similar – like I've had therapists ask me that question before.
Yep.
And it has completely changed my life.
Yes.
Like a big part of my process of getting sober and stuff and like healing from my addiction was looking at how I contributed to these mm-hmm. dynamics and having mm-hmm. really hard moments. Because when I graduated college, I really had it that I did nothing wrong. Everyone was mean to me. People didn't understand. And I had to like really look at – and it's one of the most powerful things I would say about 12-step programs.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're, you know, if you've listened to me for a while, you know that I think that there are positives and, you know, pros and cons to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful for some people and it doesn't work for everyone. But one piece of it that I do have taken into my life is looking at where you can be responsible as a way to be empowered, like you were talking about. As a way to acknowledge that you can maybe make a difference in this mm-hmm. not happening again.
Mm-hmm.
And if we aren't willing to have that hard moment of looking at ourselves or acknowledging where we weren't perfect or where we made a mistake or where we how we could do better, it does feel like this will continue to happen for forever. And it mm-hmm. makes us feel worse. It's kind of like taking medicine. It's like it feels bad going down and you don't want to do it, but it helps you in the long run.
Well, and it's the question like – and I know you've had clients say stuff like this because I've had it as well where it's kind of like why do I end up in the same situation?
Yes.
Why does the same thing keep happening? Why does this pattern keep repeating itself? And it's like how did you contribute to this dynamic?
Yeah.
How did you – get involved with it. Like I know there were times where I wasn't having conversations that I should have had because I was afraid.
Yeah.
There were boundaries that I should have had that I didn't want to put out because I was afraid.
Yep. Yep.
And this is like, this isn't just this one situation. This is in multiple different areas of my life. I'm an aggressive people pleaser. I am loyal to my core and to a fault. And I don't check in with myself sometimes.
Yeah.
And thus other people or the people that I'm working with or whatever the dynamic is aren't necessarily doing anything quote unquote wrong.
Yep.
It's stuff that I was never comfortable or okay with, but then not saying anything.
Yeah.
And so that's my fault if I feel like, why do I feel like mm-hmm. this is happening or whatever? And again, I'm not speaking to any specific situation. This is just me like using it as an example of like, well, okay, I keep finding myself in the same dynamic or I keep finding myself in the mm-hmm. same situation or I keep being friends with the same people or I keep getting in a relationship with the same person. It's like stop putting it all on them.
Mm-hmm.
Stop putting it all –
because you can't – they – like right?
Right.
Like, even if it's true, like I like to do this mental exercise of okay, let's say there is – it is 100% their fault and 0% your fault, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What if we just – even if that's true – what if we just like try on as a thought exercise?
Ooh.
How could I have managed this differently, right? How could I have prevented this from happening? How did I contribute to the dynamic? I think that can be helpful too because people, myself included, we can get so stuck in like right and wrong and good and bad mm-hmm. and who was at fault and who wasn't instead of being like we all contribute to a dynamic in some way. And the good, mm-hmm. good news is that means there is some power that we have in it then.
Yeah. We can do things differently and we can choose to approach it differently.
Yeah.
And again, like also like the caveat here too, this is not victim blaming.
Yes.
This is not at all about saying, because something did happen to you that you had no say in, was not your fault, but, you know, you were, God forbid, sexually assaulted or abused or taken advantage of. No.
Yeah.
That is not saying any of those things that happened to you was your fault.
Yeah.
What we're saying is, what would you have liked to do differently?
Yeah.
In that situation, looking back.
Yeah.
How would, like, the most powerful, empowered, badass version of you liked to have responded to that?
And I think in some cases, like you were talking about, there isn't anything to do.
No.
In fact, I would say in those, like, that's not what we're talking about at all. We're really talking about situations like friendship, work, things like that, not just traumas that happen to people.
Yes. There is a line here. And again, if you're listening to this podcast, I would like to think that you are on board with our idea of nuance and that there's multiple ways to talk about things and look at things. And so I just wanted to be clear that this was not about victim blaming. This is about looking at certain situations in your life and, like, asking yourself, how can I be, like, the best version of me?
Yeah. And where do you have power?
Yes.
Like, where can you take your power back?
Right. Where have you been giving that away? Are you letting people influence you too much? Are you letting work dictate your life too much? Are you feeling like all of this anger and rage and resentment because you're not speaking up and you're not using your voice and you're not advocating and defending yourself, right? Yeah. So yeah, that's been, like, a life-changing question for me that I've tried really hard to incorporate.
And I think there are times I can say for my life where I did do things that I regret.
Yes.
I did contribute to the dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
I should have done things differently.
Mm-hmm.
And as painful as it is just, I don't know. One thing, and I didn't include this on my list, but it's coming up for me as one thing that's really changed my life, is I used to have such pressure on myself to be perfect. And I think if you fall into that, it can then be hard to admit when you made a mistake. And it can prevent you from being reflective because you have this, like, rigid bar that, you know, you're failing if you don't meet it. And what I've really – and I used to be paralyzed by that. And what I really did that changed my life was start being like, okay, it's a given that I'll make mistakes and do things that I regret because I'm imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
But what I can commit to is doing the right thing when I know better. I can commit to, like, making things right. You know, I can commit to, like, correcting something if I make a mistake or do something wrong. Mm-hmm. I can commit to doing better in the future. And once I got clear that that was my commitment instead of, like, perfect being my commitment, it became so much easier for me to exist in the world and take risks and be honest and have hard conversations because it took all this pressure off of me needing to get it right.
Well, and I think while you were saying that, like, when you were using the word pressure, what I heard was, like, shame.
Yeah.
Shaming ourselves into being like, I'm not enough. I always do this wrong, bad, incorrectly, like, whatever the verbiage is. Like, all of those thoughts are rooted in shame, which is rooted in the belief that we're not enough.
Yeah.
And so if your goal is perfection, of course you will always fall short of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course it will never be enough if perfect is your goal, because that doesn't – it's not real. And I don't even mean that in some, like, you know, cheesy woo-woo way. Like, it's just – there's no such thing as that. There's no such thing as, like, normal or perfect or like, all of those are just – visions that we create from our most wounded selves to try to give us something that we're, like, working towards.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up just hurting our own feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I think that – and that's where I think it's painful, but it's really powerful. And there is relief on the other side if you're able to have those – conversations with yourself.
Well, and I think even for you, like in your sobriety, when you finally like turned around and looked mm-hmm. in the mirror, that was some serious short-term pain.
Yes.
For very long-term gain.
Yes. Yeah.
And sustainable gain.
Yeah.
Which is the difference.
Yeah. So I also was thinking about this in the context of, right, perfectionism and mm-hmm. promising that you'll do better. I think about this also a lot as a parent.
Oof.
Because I think that there's a lot of pressure on parents to be perfect, to do what's right, to keep up with the exact right way to mm-hmm. raise your child. Mm-hmm. And this has helped me so much in being like, I may not always get it right, but I can always repair.
Ooh.
And I think the word repair is so important because it's not just like when I was saying sort of like, I'll make it right. That's what I mean by I will repair to make it right with someone if I make a mistake, or I will do it differently in the future. But I really think we underestimate, and I think you could think about this too, Sam, as a therapist, right? I think it's fascinating. Some of the best sessions you get and the deepest relationships you get with clients are when there has been a disagreement, or in therapy we call it a rupture.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, maybe your client doesn't agree with what you said, or they are impacted by something, or, you know, they feel a certain way about therapy, and you're able to have a conversation where they're honest with you, and you have this opportunity to repair. Because repair, I kind of think of it as it strengthens like the roots that are there, even in your relationships, right? Like, being able to have an experience as a people pleaser of being able to say, hey, I wish I would have told you this and I didn't because mm-hmm. I was afraid or I didn't want to upset you. It actually bothered me, or I made a mistake. And coming back to that repair, it actually really helps increase trust in all areas, because then we get to trust that we can be honest with someone, that we can work through conflict, which all relationships end up with some sort of conflict. And I think a lot of us, we could do a whole episode on this. Like, I think that we forget that. Like, I think we think that there are ways to just never have conflict with people. And that's not true.
Or that if we're having conflict, it means something is like inherently flawed with it.
Yeah.
And I think like that's such – to like focus on the word repair is such a hopeful reframe because it – means that like our mistakes are not fatal. Like there is room to do differently. What we need is to acknowledge, take accountability, and then adjust and change our behaviors. Right? And that's a two-way street that we could do a 30-part episode thing on. But like, just this idea of there's room. Like, we can make mistakes. We can adjust. We can pivot in our behavior and our responses to things.
And then it is not as shameful and like detrimental, I think, and paralyzing when things don't turn out the way we wanted them to. Because we have like this bridge out of that to make things better in the future, to, you know, circle back to what part did you play in this.
Yeah, I really love that.
Now that it is officially the new year, it might be a great time for you to seek therapy. If so, I'd love to share with you about my practice, Therapy for Women Center. We are located in the Philadelphia area, and we also have therapists licensed in 42 states across the country. If you're interested, check out our website, therapyforwomencenter.com.
This one, I posted about this one.
Oh, yeah?
Very recently. You don't eat the fruit the day you plant the seed. And the beautiful thing is the fruit is whatever you decide it is.
Yeah.
And I am someone who has, piggybacking off of our shame and perfection conversation, I have astronomical goals and expectations for myself. And I will often find myself in a position that even when I try something, I will immediately compare myself to someone that is 10, 15, 20 steps ahead of me and be like, see, there we go. Like, just another sign of why I'm not good enough, smart enough, talented enough, People don't want to listen to me. People don't want to pay attention, blah, blah, blah. And we're both wounded people during this podcast. That's why we're talking to you. But when I heard that quote when I first got into kind of this more like entrepreneurial world. Mm-hmm. And I loved it so much because it reminded me that something taking time is not indicative of failure. Mm. Which then ties into the second part of it, going with like the farming metaphor.
I love a good metaphor.
I know. My clients, they're sick of me. That like them every session, I'm like, though, if we thought of it like this.
Yeah.
Think of it like this. But anyway, so you don't eat the fruit the day you plant the seed also transitions to slow growth, strong roots. And I think both of these demonstrate what stable, healthy relationships look like.
Yeah.
And I think not even just our friendships or our romantic relationships or our family relationships, but career opportunities, decisions around our career, financial goals and growth, yeah. right? Like anything that can be done well often has to be done in a measured way.
Yeah.
And like to say that something is going to take a while to get to is not indicative that you are doing it incorrectly, that something is unachievable, that it's not possible. It just means that there's a lot of building blocks that go into you getting to that place.
Yeah.
And I think also if you are building from, like if you are a first generation college student, if you are the first person in your family to have like a master's degree, if you are the first person in your family to, you know, buy a home, right? Like you are starting from a much farther back place than other people.
Yes.
And just because you do something at 40 that somebody else did at 25 doesn't make that achievement any less. But also when you're in the grind of it and you're building something and you're trying to get to something, I think it will feel so meaningless. Like it'll feel like I'm just hurting my own feelings and like putting myself through this for no purpose.
Yep.
And I think this could be true not just for like more tangible materialistic things, but like when you're talking about like you're dating somebody or you're building a relationship. Like it is always a warning sign when 2 weeks in someone's like, I love you. I'm going to spend the rest of my life with you. You're the best thing that's ever happened. Like that's not real.
Yep. No, what that person is doing is wanting a reality so much that they're slotting you into their picture that already exists. And that means that almost anyone could be in that picture, unfortunately.
They don't know
enough to know that you're the right person for that picture.
They're love bombing you. I'm sorry. If you're listening to this and you're like, oh my God, I'm holding your hand. Sorry. You are wonderful.
Yeah.
But you're not that wonderful.
They just don't know that you're wonderful yet. They don't know enough to know that for sure.
They don't know what you're wonderful for. You just have a heartbeat.
It's the problem.
And I mean that with love. So it is okay if you're taking time to get to know someone. It is okay if you don't have like everything that you want to have happen, like line up, right? Like they met my family. I met their family. We had our first fight. We did this. Yeah. We went on our first trip. Like it doesn't have to happen that aggressively.
Yep.
It requires intention and it requires work.
Yep.
And it's okay if there's like a slow, steady, moderated pace.
Yeah.
That allows you to be checking in with each other, to be communicating with each other, to be talking about what you want. So anyway, just using the relationship as an example, as someone who's dating. But also, I think it's just a really – I've been seeing a lot with some of my clients, not only in their romantic relationships, but their friendships of like kind of coming on a little too strong.
Yeah.
And expecting too much right off the bat.
Yeah.
And no, that's okay.
Yeah.
Like it, it's okay if you're just sending like memes back and forth to each other for a while, or like you do dinner, or you're not planning the girls' trip right away. Like, it's okay that things take time.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean something is bad or wrong. It just means that you're working on something that's really important. Like something that has a lot of meaning and a lot of value. And to protect that and make sure it's something stable, it takes time.
I love that. I think that that is something I for sure get caught in sometimes of being like, this should be a success. And if it's not, I'm going to move on. Because it can feel like we're wasting our time.
Yes.
Right? Like, yeah, and I think that's what's really hard about it is there isn't always a clear-cut answer of, am I building and working towards fruit that is going to come? Or did I plant the seeds?
And the root is dead.
And did I plant the seeds and there isn't anything coming and I don't know? Or it's not coming very fast. It's not a healthy plant, you know, whatever. Right. And I think that's what's really hard is like the older you get, the less time you have in a lot of ways. And it makes pressure sometimes. You don't always see the impacts of what you're doing. But I do love this also concept because I think it comes right in line with, you know, the idea that no one's an overnight success.
Right.
I think it's very interesting to see how all these things have to – when you watch someone sort of – like Sabrina Carpenter, I think, is a good example of this.
Yes, it's
right? There were all these things that she was doing in the background. I mean, this is, I think, her sixth or seventh album. But if she hadn't done all of that, she wouldn't be ready for the moment and the opportunity that happened to come this year, right? Like, it's not just that her opening for the Eras Tour instantly – made her a success. It was she had the right opportunity at the right time after she had put in all this work, or Chapel Roan, right? Like Midwest Princess had been already out. She was let go by her manager, you know, her record label before that. And I mean, what a testament to, I think that's one thing that we did a whole episode on Chapel Roan and the nuance of that. Obviously, Sam and I are big fans of her, but so like, in our, it was such an anomaly in our like algorithmic world of right, new is your opportunity to pop off, and if you miss it, you missed it,
you're done.
And how she happened to through a single this year, everyone you know, make her back catalog just go crazy.
There's no, I loved what you brought up about like almost like being prepared to take something on.
Yeah, what is that quote? It's like, luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity.
Ooh. I think something that I would like to offer to build off kind of that idea where you said like, how do you know like what's working or what isn't? I found in my own journey that a lot of times it wasn't necessarily that the seed – that I had planted was bad. It's the way I was tending to it. Meaning there were opportunities that I thought were the surefire direction to where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
And I realized that that wasn't working.
Yeah.
Right? Like I had a lot of goals and things that I was working on, and I realized that that part of the plant was dead. And so you'd have to prune it a bit, and then you kind of have to pause and wait, and you care for it a little bit, and you it stays kind of small for a while, and then you just keep sticking to the routine, and you keep showing up, and you keep nurturing it, and you keep taking care of it. And then when the next opportunity comes, you're ready to go.
Yeah.
Like, because you're already in the habit, you're already in the routine. And I've seen that in my own life, that it wasn't necessarily that like the goals and the dreams that I had were wrong. It was that sometimes I had to pivot and be doing something differently and try something new and go for something that I in, like a year before would have been like, no, like that's not what I want.
Yeah.
Like for the longest time, I didn't think I would want to do individual therapy. For the longest time, I was like, no, like there's some opportunities within like this hospital system and management and all these sorts of things, and I can do that. And then I was like, I will yeet myself into a black hole if I have to keep doing that.
Yeah.
And so then I tried, you know, I started my own business and I learned so much. And it ended up not being the right thing for me and my business partner. And we put that to bed. And I just kept moving forward and saying, like, nope, there's things that I want to try, things that I want to do. And then I found this job and blah, 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 right. Yeah. Like, so I think it's not always that the seed itself is bad. It's just that, are you willing to pivot and are you willing to try things differently to keep moving towards like this larger vision that you're working towards?
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking so much of, if I wouldn't have had two failed podcasts, we wouldn't have been able to set up our podcast so quickly. No.
So true.
I learned all about mics.
Yes.
My first podcast. I learned how to edit.
Yeah.
I learned about the cadence. And then I had my own podcast and I learned how hard it was by myself.
Yep.
All needed to happen for us to be here.
Yes. Yeah, everything has layered on itself. And I'm sure, like, if you're listening, you can think of things in your life that are probably the same.
Yeah.
Or maybe a situation in your life that you're like, ugh, why is this not working? And it's like, well, pivot.
Yeah.
The idea itself isn't wrong. Mm-hmm. Just try something different.
Yeah. Sorry. No, we last year, we were very excited about launching Therapy for Kids. We thought it would be so great and so helpful. And we spent so much time launching it and there was just not enough interest. And we did have to be like, did we give this enough time or is it not?
Is it not right?
And what we decided was we didn't have the resources to wait and find out.
Oof.
And I think that is also a choice, right? Like your time is a resource. And you also, at different points in your life, get to say, I don't have the resources right now to keep tending to this.
Seeing
to keep what will happen. Especially if you have other fruit you're growing.
If you got a whole –
and eating.
If you got a whole orchard, you know, like you got to – you have to allot your time. And I think we even had this conversation yesterday. Kind of a little bit where we were talking about the direction for this very podcast and things we wanted to focus on and where we think we want to pivot and move things to. And I think for me, that's going to require like a realignment of some other stuff that I was working on moving into some of this. So I think the reason we're sharing like these insights is because like we are actively applying these things in our lives right now.
Yeah.
And we are therapists with incredible skill sets, tons of experience. And here we are, like, still sitting chatting about we're living these principles right now.
Absolutely.
I think this is, with all of that said, I think this is a good space to end right now.
We hope that you all liked listening to this podcast. Yeah. And Sam and I actually have more to go through.
Yeah.
So come back next week for part two of our current best insights, things we're applying right now in 2025.
Woo!
And it would mean so much to us, as we've talked about, if you rated, reviewed, shared. I found out recently that I actually wasn't even – I don't know if you know this. It's a special spot of Spotify that you have to do to like subscribe. You have to make sure you subscribe.
Oh, it's not just like hitting the bell or whatever.
Yeah. You have to do notifications. So if you listen to us on Spotify, make sure you hit that bell. You get the notification so that it will automatically download. And that would mean so much to us.
Yes.
Rate, review, share. If you're on Spotify, comment. We love reading your comments on the episodes too.
We appreciate you. And we will see you next week.
Bye.